Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Say my name.
Mike Florio.
Get the name right. That's all that matters. Spell my name right or say my name properly.
Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports.
Florio writing articles about it.
NFL Insider.
Take a spin around the league. We bring in Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio.
My name is my name.
With Bernstein and McKnight on 670 The Score.
Mike Florio joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. He is on Twitter at Pro Football Talk. Pro Football Talk, NBC Sports. Hello, Mike. What's going on, man?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
It's good. The two sides, the union and the league, appear to be talking and fairly convivially about extending the current collective bargaining agreement. How optimistic are you that they'll be able to do this with relative alacrity?
Well, I mean, here's the problem. Identifying the true deadline, because it's foolish to move to your bottom line position until there's a mutually accepted final moment for doing so. And sometimes it's when you embark on the last year of the current CBA that got a deal done back in 2006. Last time around, it was right up against the brink of losing real money by canceling weeks of the preseason. So it's all about identifying and mutually agreeing on a deadline. And then whenever that deadline is, that's when the deal gets done, because no one wants to move to their bottom line before that, because then you get squeezed off of it. It's that simple. It's old school, basic negotiating. So I think they want to get it done before March, when the new league year, when the final league year under the current CBA would start. And they also have an impetus to get it done because they want to then turn their attention to doing new TV deals. And I think the union is on board with that. Now, the question becomes, when you get to the tough issues, it's very easy to make progress on the simple issues. The tough issues, that's where the challenge is going to be, because the players, I think, want to take back some of the things they gave up last time. And yeah, I think the owners are happy with the current deal, but they also never turn their backs on an opportunity to get more. And they'll probably push, and the union will push, and we'll see if they are better suited to push in a cooperative way and avoid even an off-season work stoppage like we saw 8 years ago.
So would you put into the easy-to-get-done or difficult-to-get-done category the news that we're seeing in the last hour or so that the replay, that the competition committee is interested in tweaking now the new replay review rules? And Hail Mary plays could be exempt from interference review? What's going on here?
Yeah, well, I mean, here's what's going on. The need for change in the aftermath of the Rams-Saints NFC Championship game was obvious. And I firmly believe the competition committee, led by Rich McKay, the Falcons CEO, deliberately dragged their feet and tried to shout down anyone who would say there needed to be change. The attitude initially from McKay was, basically, this is a 100-year storm, and it's not going to happen for another 100 years, so let's not worry about it. And I think the commissioner's attitude was, hey, you know what? If this ever happens again, it's not going to be on my watch, so who cares, right? Let's just assume that this is a very, very rare event, and let's not change everything because of it. And then what happened was they got to the league meetings in March, and they realized that the coaches and the owners weren't going to stand for it. So they rushed to throw together a rule that generally makes pass interference subject to replay review across the board, offensive, defensive, just like any other play that's subject to replay review, and they went home. And then they realized, you know what? We may have gone too far with this. And now they're in the process of carving back some of these things. And you know what? Some of it makes sense. If you're going to have replay review of offensive and defensive pass interference, you need to account for things like the automatic review standard. You know, the automatic review standard kicks in when there isn't clear and obvious evidence that the ruling on the field was correct. Think about pass interference. How many times will it be clear and obvious that a call or an on-call if pass interference is correct. So then you have to slow the game down and do a replay review. That's what they're trying to get away from. But these are all things that should have been addressed before March. And if the competition committee hadn't been so obstinate about trying to kick the can down the road as is, they would have addressed these things then. And it just, I think that they're going to overreact and they're going to tweak and they're going to do this. And I think next year they're just going to implement the sky judge and be done with it, which they should have done in the first place.
I think it's hilarious how we're watching what's going on in Green Bay with the new coaching regime and Aaron Rodgers' continued presence and just sort of...
And Game of Thrones reviews, obviously.
Well, sure, but measuring every little thing that happens, like we're watching Brezhnev in the Kremlin and trying to figure it out. That now they're saying that Aaron Rodgers believes what his early looks at the Matt LaFleur offense. He says, I don't know it, but I think it works. It's an offense I can infuse creativity, missing a word there, and put my stamp on. So already some kind of territorial battle is going on between these two. This appears to be exactly what we expected it could be.
This is either going to work extremely well or it's going to be a disaster, right? I mean, we know that the offense has been substandard in Green Bay over the past several years. Too simplistic, relies too much on Aaron Rodgers' incredible God-given abilities. You know, someone explained to me last year, and it makes a lot of sense, the tension between a franchise quarterback and a head coach, a healthy competitive tension should be, there are some plays where the quarterback makes a big throw and makes the coach look good, and then there are plays where the coach has designed something that allows the quarterback to score an easy touchdown and make the quarterback look good. And I don't think McCarthy's offense had enough of those easy touchdowns for Aaron Rodgers. He had to work for everything. And the question is, in this new offense, will there be enough complexity, enough motion, enough tricks that Aaron Rodgers is going to get some, you know, 10-yard, just pop the ball in the air, guy is wide open type plays? And if he does, it's going to work. If he doesn't, then we're going to have salty Aaron Rodgers, who's sensitive about everything. Did you see he was sensitive about people who thought that his cameo in the Game of Thrones was a guy who got burned up as he was running away because the guy who was running wasn't athletic enough? Why? How dare you think that's me? Jeez.
He's absolutely fantastic because he's a crazy person. I mean, he's obsessed with everything around him. I just wonder how quickly could that guy torch everything if he wanted to? How quickly could he go Drogon and make everything on that team essentially disappear? He really does hold everything in his hands because he's got the football.
All he's got to do is roll his eyes one time when Matt LaFleur walks out of the room, right? I mean, it doesn't take much for Aaron Rodgers to undermine the new head coach. And my big concern about Matt LaFleur, I've interviewed him, I've met him a couple of times. He seems like a really nice guy. And I don't know that that fits with being what you need to be as a football coach. And you need to be able to go in and regard X and O's, that all takes care of itself. You got assistance for that. The head coach has to be able to go in and take over the room and instill respect and trust and confidence. And you don't have to be over the top. Tony Dungy was able to pull it off. But you have to be a guy, and the less proven you are, like LaFleur is, you've got to be able to go in there and communicate. And if you've got a guy sitting in the front row who either isn't paying attention or the minute you turn your back, he's making faces. And I'm not saying like he would act like he would in middle school, but just, you know, there are ways you can undermine a guy. And if Matt LaFleur can't command that room because Aaron Rodgers isn't on board, it's going to show.
The other team in the division that's putting in a new offense is the Detroit Lions, and it's not an identical situation, but, you know, Matt Patricia was always a defensive guy, brings in Darrell Bevell. They also have a long-tenured veteran quarterback there in Matthew Stafford, who took some time away with his ailing wife but is now back. And what's the lift there for him? How does that compare with what the Packers are doing?
Well, I think here's the real challenge with Matthew Stafford. He gets a lot of criticism for the things he's failed to do during his career. He gets called a guy who doesn't want to be a leader, a guy who doesn't embrace the full quarterback experience. I remember when Reggie Bush was there, and he suggested that they have a team meeting because things weren't going well. And Stafford's like, we don't need a team meeting. Well, Reggie Bush walks in with a Super Bowl ring. I would defer to Reggie Bush. But I think a lot of this is Stafford's never been coached hard. He's never been coached aggressively. And Matt Patricia and company are trying to undo what 10 years did when Stafford had a revolving door of coaches who maybe didn't get the most out of him. And I think that he's a candidate to have a second act of his career where the numbers are the same as they've been, but the results are better because he's more tuned in with what it takes to lead that locker room and to be that guy. And you know, to have a guy like Matt Patricia constantly share with him examples of things that Tom Brady does in New England. There's really an opportunity there to take control of that relationship and get more out of Matthew Stafford. And it's not his fault that other coaching staffs didn't get more out of him. He's just showing up and playing, and he's doing what they expect him to do. Now they expect more. We'll see if he delivers it.
So after they hired a new head coach and after they went through the NFL draft, the Jets fired their general manager. What led to the Jets being a complete embarrassment this time, Mike?
Well, I think that this was a marriage that was doomed to fail from the get-go, regardless of whether or not Adam Gase, the new coach of the team, was determined to implement and win a power struggle with Mike Maccagnan, the former GM. They're two dramatically different personalities. Gase is very high-strung. He's wound very tightly. He wants to win, and he wants to focus on coaching. He doesn't want to have to worry about all the other crap that goes on in a football organization, and he needs to feel like there are people in place who can take care of all that crap so he doesn't have to worry about it. And with Maccagnan, you know, we've heard time and again, he was wishy-washy, he was indecisive, and Gase wants somebody who's going to be more like him. Now, the problem is if you're exactly alike, then you never get along, but you need somebody who complements Gase. And where they are now, there's two different ways they can go. They can go out and find the best person for the job, and that may be someone who has in his front pocket a list of coaches he'd love to hire, and Adam Gase's name isn't on it. Or you hire somebody that you know Gase will work well with. I think that's the better play here. Make the most out of this situation. Don't have another arranged marriage where the coach doesn't want the GM, the GM doesn't want the coach. They should have gotten rid of Maccagnan at the time they made the change and start from scratch with a GM and a head coach who are on the same page. But now that Gase is entrenched, get him a guy that he knows he can work with and let Gase focus on coaching the team so he can channel that frustration, that tension, that energy toward coaching the football team and not, you know, turn tables upside down in the front office. Not that he did that, but you know, that's that he's just very, very driven and focused, and you need a GM that complements that personality type.
What did I miss about Adam Gase's rise to power? I mean, where did this come from? Like, I was the coordinator of the Bears, and he gets a head coaching job, and he's fine. And all of a sudden, he's this big swinging football Bigfoot.
Well, I mean, think about it. He got fired after 3 years with the Dolphins. Now he took Miami to the playoffs his first year on the job, and they had so many adversities in his second year. No one could have navigated through that. Maybe Bill Belichick, but they had, you know, they lost their bye week. Their first week of the season ended up being a bye week because of a hurricane, so they had to play 16 straight games right out of the gates. They had injuries. They had dysfunction. And, you know, he was trying to tear that roster down on the fly and find guys who would be... He wants to recreate New England. And it's so hard to recreate New England until you win some games.
Because, that's the epitaph of so many failed
coaches and
administrators and managers.
You can't, look, you got to have a quarterback who's willing to take peanuts. You got to have a Super Bowl MVP receiver who does a long-term deal that's worth $7 million a year, which isn't even in the top 30 of all receivers. I mean, you have to get a special vibe, and you get the special vibe by winning. You almost have to will the team to win, and then once you get there, then you can implement the Patriot way. But I feel like that's what he's trying to create. And who knows? Crazier things have happened. But I feel like it's either going to flame out very quickly, or he's going to lay the foundation to be the team in the AFC East that fills in the vacuum once Brady retires, if he ever retires.
Great stuff, Mike. Thank you.
Thanks,
see
Mike.
You guys.
That is Mike Florio. And, man, we got a whole ton of stuff to do here. Joe Ostrowski, who you heard doing updates, is one of the country's foremost experts when it comes to sports gambling
Yeah.
and the changing landscape of sports gambling. In case you weren't paying attention, the deadline for Illinois to pass a bill is the end of the month. So if Illinois is going to do this, they got to do it. And there's a lot of people putting in a lot of hours. There's people, you know, legislators that we know, friends of the show, a lot of people involved behind the scenes. Illinois is Illinoising this gambling bill right now in a way that may sink it. And Joe's going to get us updated as to what the possibilities and probability, what the odds are that something is actually going to get done for legalized gambling in this state. And shortly thereafter, there apparently is radio gold from the Les Grobstein show. And I haven't heard it yet. We're all going to hear it for the first time together.
Two pieces of gold coming up for you. It's the Bernstein McKnight Show, 670 The Score.
This team is fired up. We came here to play.
All right.
You'll lose.
What? Didn't you hear what he said?
Look at the fear in his eyes. Listen to the quiver in his voice. He's a little boy lost in a game of men.
You think we should bet against him?
I bet my entire college fund on it.
You got it.
Moe? $23 on New York.
start spreading the news. It's New York over Philadelphia, 35-10.
Yeah!
This segment is brought to you by the Chicago Bears. See past, meet present at Bears 100 Celebration Weekend, June 7th through the 9th in Rosemont. Don't miss out on players like Khalil Mack, Mitchell Trubisky, Akeem Hicks, and more on stage with your favorite Bears alumni. Free autographs, photo ops, one-of-a-kind panels. Bears 100 Celebration Weekend is the place to be. June 7th through the 9th. Visit ChicagoBears.com for tickets. Joe Ostrowski, the Score's very own sports gambling expert and evening host, joins us now on the Bernstein and McKnight Show here in studio because some people might not be paying attention to all of the ongoing machinations and backstabbing and beak wetting and everything that's going on in the potential construction of an Illinois legalized sports gambling bill that is due in, what, 10 days?
9 days now. Next Friday's when the session ends. Why did I think this would be any different? This is just Illinois politics all over again, and we're seeing it now. You go back to February, Governor Pritzker set aside $200 million in license fees for the state, so he obviously wants this to pass. Mm-hmm. He wants a bill on his desk by next Friday. We don't know if that's going to end up happening. They went from five amendments a few weeks ago down to two, and this week they are trying to hammer out the final amendment to take the vote and try to pass a bill. What's being discussed right now is the big issue is the penalty box. That's what they're calling it for FanDuel and DraftKings. This goes back to 2015 when the state could not pass a daily fantasy bill, and Lisa Madigan came out and said they're operating illegally in the state of Illinois, even though that was a lot of gray period. I mean, we were having ads for DraftKings and FanDuel, and every TV commercial had them every 30 seconds. But she came out and said that, and so a lot of people are still upset about that, that the state wasn't able to make any money off of that. So they want FanDuel and DraftKings, which are flourishing in New Jersey, 80% of the market in New Jersey. So other companies that are looking at buying a license fee are saying, hey, if they're going to come in and take 80%, we want them out and charge them more when they are allowed out of this penalty box. So, but because they have all the names, they have all the data, they do it best. They're great at promoting everything, so it's been very successful out in Jersey.
Is the amendment there, the third one, to keep DraftKings and FanDuel out, the biggest thing holding it up for a 31st vote, or are there other elements involved? I mean, I assume DraftKings and they would get into it in a legal matter and sue if these amendments were passed.
Yeah, I assumed that the license fees would be an issue and the tax rate would be an issue. I think most people thought that when you see license fee of $10 million, it was thrown around $20 million. By far, that would be the highest in the country. Yeah.
The licensing fee we're talking about is we've changed from integrity fees to licensing fees.
This is to operate. This is to operate.
I see.
The integrity fee
is just basically a royalty.
Yeah. Well, they changed the name. It went from integrity fee to royalty fee, but it's still all the same thing because people were very mad when they heard about the billionaires wanting an integrity fee. So the discussion there is Illinois being the first state to have an integrity fee, and they would be if they passed this, and it would be for in-game wagers. They would tell the sports books you must use the official league data, which to me is a box score, which we all have. But so it sounds like Illinois is going down that road of using official league data, having an integrity fee, a penalty box, trying to keep FanDuel and DraftKings away for a few years. A 25% tax was talked about. That would be the second highest in the entire country, only behind Pennsylvania, which is 36.
As if we're not bordered by other states?
Yes.
So how is that any different than gas or cigarettes with people deciding they'd rather do their brick-and-mortar business across a border?
Right, Iowa. So I said the license fee for Illinois, they're talking $10, $20 million. In Iowa, they just passed a few weeks ago, the license fee is $45,000. And the tax rate is pretty close to Nevada. Nevada is 675, and it's in the single digits for Iowa as well. And I believe Indiana's comparable too. So yeah, I thought
they're killing the golden goose before they even create it.
I thought that Illinois would just try to do what they can. It would put pressure on the state to get this done and do it right by the deadline. But I'm not optimistic right now.
Is there interest, as you perceive it, from sports bettors if they get this wrong? you know, will a certain subset of sports gamblers still engage in legalized Illinois sports betting if this stuff is wrong?
Do you mean staying
offshore? Tax rates too high?
Yeah, or just going to the
thick,
go to the corner bookie.
All this stuff. I mean, how are people going to get into this?
Well, there's no doubt. Even if they do it right, I think people are going to stick with what's comfortable. Why do I want people tracking my money, knowing exactly what I'm doing with every dollar? And I don't know how these sports books, if we're talking about a 25% tax rate, I don't know how you pull that off without changing the odds dramatically, where we're talking about games, if you want the Bears as a 3-point favorite, where it's minus 120, meaning you would have to bet $120 to win 100. That's crazy. Well, I can just stay offshore and pay 110,
yeah,
which ends up being a huge difference.
Will there be, in any larger conception of like some kind of omnibus gambling bill, an opportunity to finally, maybe well after the fact, help the racetracks by getting them a slice of the pie or slots or something? I know it's way too late at this point to really save them, but maybe bring back some purses and bring back some higher quality racing.
No, absolutely. That was being discussed when they narrowed it down to two amendments a couple of weeks ago. One of them actually mentioned horse tracks. There's going to be 20 licenses. That's what they're looking at. And 7 were set aside, I think, for horse tracks or brick and mortar locations. So at the low fee of $10, $20, $15 million, you can get in.
Right now, if you had to make a call at the deadline, will Illinois pass something to legalize sports gambling?
No.
No.
I was at 90% at one time. I thought it was for sure.
Wow.
But it really feels... you're asking me to trust the politicians in this state? All we've seen is these guys go to jail for you. Throughout our entire
lives.
And not
just the one time.
And it may be that all of these state things become moot anyway if, in fact, that there is a sweeping federal legislation that standardizes all of it and keeps people from having to go state to state, which might be the best for everybody involved anyway.
And even if they do pass something by next Friday, I'd rather it be pushed back to November than just completely mess it up, and it takes 5-6 years to even fix the whole thing.
Is it better for them to put something down on paper that sort of works that they can fix later on, or like you say, just wait until later? No, I of course I don't. Just someone to maybe go after it and fix it, but having something in some cases is better than not. I don't know whether that's the case here.
How Illinois is this? So they're calling DraftKings and FanDuel bad actors because they were operating in the state like they were throughout much of the country over the past few years, and they're still doing so. But in 2007, Governor Pritzker was on the board of directors of YouBet. It's an online wagering site, and they made an agreement with 4 Illinois horse tracks. Now, back in 2001, Attorney General Jim Ryan said that they were called advanced deposit wagering sites, that they were illegal in the state of Illinois.
Right.
So Governor Pritzker was on the board of directors of an illegal sports betting website.
Wow. That's amazing. Joe, thank you very much for the information. I know it's complicated stuff. There's a lot of people who want to know about it. We appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks.
Joe Ostrowski, Early Odds Evenings. He is not just a gambling guy. He is on the forefront of analytic stuff as well, but keeping up with some very, very difficult news to cover right here. It's just this state. My God.
It's amazing. They can determine bad actors operating in a gray area, turning massive profits while thinking, I'd like to be just like them, by the way. I'd also like to engage in that business and soak up 80% of the market share. It's incredible.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the number 17 Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. Okay, when we delve into the odd wilderness that is Score Overnights with Les Grobstein, you meet interesting and eccentric people, and you find odd things. You absolutely never know what happens in the wee small hours of the morning. Rick Camp, what do we need to know about what we're about to hear?
It's less a caller and talking about the human race.
Bring it.
Let's go to Mount Prospect up northwest. Melissa, how you doing? Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
You want to see robot umpires making calls?
No, never. No, I believe in humans. I believe in humans for everything, including when you call.
And guess what? Players make mistakes. Managers make mistakes. GMs make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. And you know what? There's going to be more mistakes made by human beings. And you said you want to see humans. I'm 100% in agreement with you.
I think humans are awesome.
I want to see humans doing it too. We all make mistakes. Every one of us does.
I can talk to the radio and talk to you in the middle of the night. I love humans. I think that we're exceptional, every one of us, and that it really comes down to, do we want a world where humans are first and we actually make money taking care of food, taking care of a roof over our heads? You know what I mean? That's why we have to have jobs that we can't have automated. And look at the poor tollway. Look at the tollway and how that's changed. And all those jobs are gone. I mean, it would be a sad world if all our jobs were replaced by computers and by robots. We can't have that. Robots don't need to be warm. They don't need to eat. They don't need to have clothing and roofs over their head. They don't have to pay for that. We need humans to have jobs.
I've got computers, too, and you know those things flip me off every day, the computers do.
They do, and they don't work, and then they freeze, and then they break, and then you lose a document because it never saves to the drive to begin with. So it's not reliable.
I'm ready to take my laptop some days. The Chicago River is right near the building here, the Prudential building, and I want to dump it into the Chicago River almost every day. Then that thing just ticks me off.
Do you know what you need to use to clean it? It's the craziest thing. It's a rock, believe it or not. It's the same thing that they use for construction. It's gypsum. What they make fiberglass and drywall out of, it's called gypsum. It's a mineral.
I have a better way of solving the problem. Just dump it in the river. And get another one.
I will send you guys sticks of gypsum, selenite sticks, and you can put this right by your computer and it'll clean everything. It's a rock and it cleans everything.
Melissa, I wish that were true, but I have no faith in that. But anyway, listen, I appreciate you calling, and we hope to talk with you soon, okay?
Hey, I love you guys. I love you guys. I listen to WGN Radio around the clock.
But that's not what you're listening to.
Wait, amazing.
A selenite stick of gypsum that cleans your computer?
That is just terrific. That is
Why
absolutely
Why not have a human
beautiful.
Clean your computer?
No. Humans for every job, Dan, except...
I think humans are awesome.
Except cleaning computers. That has to be done by a gypsum rock.
I see. So
every other job, humans.
Right.
Computer cleaning,
rock.
Magic rock.
So
I want to see humans doing it too.
Well, I mean... Obviously, that's a big industry. You get that. You're going to have that.
What?
That is beautiful.
Thanks to the tipster that was up and heard that and decided to bring that to us. She's going to send gypsum selenite sticks to clean computers.
Yep.
Because that's a job that shouldn't be done by humans.
Nope, absolutely not.
But humans are awesome.
Every other job, good to go. And by the way, humans make mistakes all the time. But. When computers make mistakes, that's we got to throw them out the window.
I've got computers too, and you know those things flip me off every day.
Every day.
I don't think those are computers if they're flipping you off. We have a shot at $1,000 cash for a lucky texter at some point. We're going to give away a foursome of golf at the Grand Geneva Resort and Spa in Lake Geneva for the Brute of the Highlands. We have the Midday Midway coming up next. I've got a surprising story. It's a literal baby shark story. I'm going to talk to you about baby sharks.
Now that's stuck in my head.
No, they're eating things you wouldn't expect them to eat, and somebody tried to figure out how. There's also a real-life supervillain on the loose in New York.
The Midday Midway is on the way. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Midday Midway brought to you by New Mail Medical Center. Discover the new you. NewMailMedical.com. We discussed the Cubs trying to figure out how hurt Javier Baez actually is.
Also how magic he is.
And whether or not he's actually going to tell anybody how he actually feels, or they can get him in an MRI machine or an X-ray machine and find out, because you want to make sure they're doing the right thing with him.
If you're interested in that, by the way, Theo Epstein's going to be on the Mac and Parkin show 3:30 this afternoon. I'm sure it'll be addressed.
Also got into the backstory of the stuff between Todd Frazier and Adam Eaton. Now that Frazier came out and actually talked about it. Mike Florio had football stuff. We talked about the Illinois gambling bill, yay or nay. Is it actually going to happen? As Joe Ostrowski joined us, and that priceless Les Grobstein stuff.
Keep it a little sportsy here to begin our midday midway. I don't know if you saw Jeff Passan write this up, but you heard of Carter Stewart? Carter Stewart?
No.
He is a 19-year-old pitcher, and he's going over to Japan to pitch for the SoftBank Hawks of the Japanese Pacific League. He's got a 6-year contract. He had been drafted, Stewart had, by the Braves. He was the 8th pick in the 2018 draft out of Florida, out of high school. Did not sign because they reduced the signing bonus because of an alleged injury. He was expected to be chosen again in the second round of this coming draft. He's bypassing draft, saying thanks, but no thanks. And here's why this really, really matters. Because as more and more players are seeing their playing time shrunk or subtracted before they get to the major leagues, you know, they're getting their service time delayed. They're not getting called up right away. All this stuff, they're getting Chris Bryanted. Carter Stewart has found himself a 6-year contract worth $7 million play in Japan. Now, what's also key here is that Stewart, by signing when he did, there's a couple of different bylaws that trigger. It means that he will be an international free agent when he's done with the contract at age 25, which means he'll be able to sign with whatever major league team is willing to have him, depending on how his career goes over in Japan.
That's outside the box thinking.
It's very much outside the box. It's a little bit like Brandon Jennings, who went overseas right away. He's kind of the famous example of skipping college and the free labor route. Now, granted, Stewart would have gotten probably something close to a $2-3 million signing bonus, something like that. And then not been paid for a couple of years as he tries to rise through the minor leagues.
Like be fed.
Everybody does. Yeah, right. there's the ride the buses and the whole deal. But Stewart is heading over to Japan. Now, unless you think this is going to be something that many people do, it's worth noting that in Japan, there is a limit of 4 foreign-born players on each team. Those rules, it seems, don't look like they're going to change all that much. So I don't think this is going to be something for everybody. But the bargaining power could be interesting, and especially if we see one or two or maybe even 3 more players do this over the next 2 years before the CBA runs out between baseball and the players union, we could have a wild card moving on here. It'd be interesting.
This is from National Geographic. An ichthyological researcher named Marcus Dryman caught a small tiger shark in a research project in the Gulf of Mexico back in 2010. And they brought it out of the boat to measure it, weigh it, tag it, and it barfed up a big mass of feathers. And they were trying to figure out what was happening, because they know that tiger sharks are voracious and opportunistic eaters. They will eat albatross. They will
floating on the top of the water. They go up and snag that.
They eat a lot of sea turtles. They're, in fact, adapted. However, he scooped up the feathers and he took them back to the lab to analyze them. It turns out the feathers belonged to a brown thrasher, not a seabird. So they're trying to figure out what is going on.
Sharknado.
They then went out and caught a bunch of tiger sharks that were small enough to wrestle on board. They would place a PVC pipe in the shark's mouth, putting a hose down the pipe, rinsing the stomach contents out into a sieve to be cataloged. The shark was released unharmed afterwards.
Would you like to be an intern
over
on that day?
Over 8 years, out of 105 sharks studied, 41 had partially digested bird remains. They all came from 11 species of North American land birds.
So how are they getting there?
Not seabirds. Swamp sparrows, marsh wrens, chirping songbirds you might see at your bird feeder. So how did they get there? And they looked seasonally of when the birds were most abundant off Mississippi and Alabama. And each species showed up in shark bellies around the time its local prevalence peaked. It's linked to songbird migration. They were getting struck down to the ocean's surface by severe and unpredictable autumnal storms as they left to fly south for the winter. Not only that, the sharks have noticed the seasonal glut of feathered calories. Juvenile tiger shark abundance in the area is 3 times higher in those months.
Huh.
So they're learning. They're newborn tiger sharks, and they believe that the tiger shark mothers are birthing their pups in the Gulf there because the young can capitalize on the seasonal songbird scavenging opportunities. So think about that.
I'll be.
That they thought it might be land shark, that they were actually getting to the bird feeder. And the Cooper's hawk is looking over like, hey, come on. This is me. It's my lunch. I do. I'm the bird feeder hunter. You're like, nope, you know, tiger shark takes precedence. I'm sorry. But what an unbelievable story just because of the curiosity of one scientist.
This from the Post. It fits the midday midway very well. An accused lemur schemer is coming clean.
Is it accused lemur? Or as Danny Parkins would say, a lemur.
Mm-hmm. The fight for preserving endangered animals scored a major victory when a 19-year-old California man agreed to plead guilty to stealing a rare lemur from a zoo last year. The man's name is Aquinas Casbar. Rock the Casbar.
He has been rocked.
Admitted in a plea agreement to swiping Isaac, a 32-year-old ring-tailed lemur from the Santa Ana Zoo
Aquinas
last July. Aquinas Casbar. The night of the animal's abduction, Casbar snuck into the zoo after hours, used a bolt cutter to create an opening in the lemur's enclosure. In the process, Capuchin monkeys escaped from the same cage.
Don't mess with them.
And had to be recovered by zoo staffers. The kidnapped critter, the oldest of its species in North American captivity, was recovered after Casbar dropped the animal off in a plastic drawer near a Newport Beach hotel. I'll read that again. He put the lemur in a plastic drawer near a hotel in Newport Beach.
Why?
No idea. Attached to the container was a note that read, "This belongs to Santa Ana Zoo, and it was taken last night. Please bring it to police." Casbar is charged with unlawfully taking endangered species, faces a year in prison, and a $100,000 fine. He will be ridiculed in prison for his weird name, Aquinas Casbar.
This is messed up. This comes from Jalopnik, which is one of the sister sites of Deadspin, Gizmodo, Jezebel. Apparently, there is a lunatic or lunatics on the loose in the New York subway system. A source tells Jalopnik, quote, "This is a nutcase who is addicted to effing with the trains." That is an MTA New York City Transit source with knowledge of the situation. Someone has been disrupting the train system, sneaking into cabs, pulling the emergency brakes, and grinding not just one train but entire lines in the system to a halt during the busiest hours of the day. And just like that, they melt into the darkness between the tunnels waiting to strike again. So yesterday, the official New York City Transit account alerted the public to this person's existence. This is not an isolated incident. There's an established MO. Jalopnik has confirmed this by reviewing internal incident reports. There are at least three so far. The suspect disrupts service primarily on the 2 and 5 lines from Flatbush Avenue in central Brooklyn to Midtown Manhattan, climbs aboard the rear of the train, unlocks the safety chains, gets into the rear cab, triggers the emergency brakes, then he disappears through the subway tunnels and out an emergency exit. Once a week for several months this has occurred, the suspect has not been caught. And they go through these incident reports April 19th, and the descriptions of an unruly customer on the back of an Uptown 5 train, person seen running off the back of the train onto the platform and disappearing, the safety cables at the back being taken down. They don't know if it's one person or more than one person, but it's been active for several months. He does not obviously aim for world domination, but just targets the most conniving evil end imaginable of messy commutes. And they think he's just a nutcase. They don't know why he
or
she is doing it. But pretty sure it's a he. But they have been, they're working on it. It is now public, and they're asking for the public's help because you can imagine the cost, the drain of all of this. And I've ridden that Flatbush to Manhattan subway before.
Awful.
No, the subway system is generally terrific and reliable. Hmm. But with stuff like this, it backs up fast. Who would do something like this?
Real quickly here, and before we get to our new tranche of Bears players on your list at 11 o'clock, I've been trying to get you into Game of Thrones for a while. Maybe this is the way in. Kit Harington, who plays Jon Snow, took a ride on a dragon in the premiere of Season 8. This was done practically and digitally. He was on a fake mechanical dragon. That's right, mechanical dragons are taking jobs from humans too. Kit Harington was on there and nearly sacrificed one to the seven gods of the seven kingdoms. It got close. Here's Kit.
There was a bit where John almost falls off the dragon, swings round really violently like this, and my right ball got trapped, and I didn't have time to say stop, and I was being swung round. In my head, I thought, this is how it ends, on this buck swinging me round by my testicles, literally.
I don't know if the background Yar. Music really goes with the whole Kit nearly lost a newt, but there is. That is your game of things. Anything? Anything? A hook?
It's a good story.
Watch a guy nearly lose a testicle, and that's the third straight day that we've talked about balls here on the Midday Midway.
And the top of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz of the 17th-ranked Cats this fall at Ryan Field. Matchups include Ohio State, Michigan State, and Iowa. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. Golf foursome at Grand Geneva to be had. A shot at $1,000 cash. An 11:30 conversation with Brian Kenny. But first,
oh God,
I hold in my hand Bears List Part 3.
40 through 26 is on 50. Your way. 50. 50 through 20 is open. Extra 10 on the Bernstein with Night Show. 670 the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.